Hello, my friends. God bless you. And welcome to Chapter 36 of the 1955 Kailua Study Series. Individual Spiritual Experience, Part 2. We learned, of course, in the last class, in Part 1, that it is your individual developed spiritual consciousness that determines your experience. And nothing out here determines it. Nothing you think, nothing you do, but your developed spiritual consciousness, which comes through your meditation periods, your 12 times a day, in which you experience and make contact. Each experience is a deepening experience and develops your consciousness further and deeper. So let's pick up the chapter here. One touch of the God experience is worth more than many books of instruction about God. We are at that point of the infinite way unfoldment where only the experience of God is going to benefit us. And that's where we're at. Many of us have had many years studying these principles, and yet still can't heal a headache. And the reason is, we haven't gone deep enough. We must know the truth, and the truth will set us free. And then after knowing the truth, we must rest in the truth. Until we have the experience of the truth, capital T, truth. Very few people, he says, in the entire history of the world actually have a God or a God experience. All religious work, so far as it pertains to the public, has to do with thoughts about God or statements about God, teachings about God, rather than bringing about the experience of God to us as individuals. Now, it was the experience in his healing work, he says, in my healing work, that showed me conclusively that believing in God or knowing about God, in fact, knowing all the truth there is to be known about God, is of no spiritual value whatsoever, although they may be steps leading up to spiritual experience or spiritual demonstration. So his practice, being a practitioner, showed him that believing in God, knowing about God, even understanding and having all the scriptures memorized, would not give one the experience. It was, what did he say, of no spiritual value. Although, if it served to bring one up to this place where we are now, where we make the actual contact, then it was worth something. So he says, I learned that it was only when a spiritual experience took place within me that a healing took place out here. And as the years have gone on, I learned, as I have had a spiritual experience within, I have experienced something of harmony in the without, whether for myself or for others. As time went on, I learned that continuing to have these moments of contact, of spiritual experience, the day came, which was a day of transition into the spirit, and then after that, it was a permanent experience. It wasn't one that had to be reestablished. Although, at times, I had to go deeper than usual to bring about a healing. Alright, so the day does come. First, the big day is when you first make the contact. I think second is the big day when you see that making the contact results in a healing, or a freeing, or a harmonizing, or setting you free from the thoughts and things of this world. And then the third big day, the biggest day, is the day when you've made this contact so often, so many times, that there's an actual moment of transition where you pass from being human into the spirit on a full-time basis. And then, I live yet not I, Christ liveth my life. And so at a certain point or depth of consciousness, all of a sudden, this morning, the idea came through, the Lord is my shepherd. And with that idea, there was a complete relaxing inside. Now you see, he had the realization. That wasn't a thought, was it? That wasn't a thought. He was sitting there and nothing was coming to him, and he had a class to put on and he knew it. So he got quiet. He became still. The mind stopped for a moment. And in that moment, he received an impartation. The Lord is my shepherd. That's all. Just the Lord is my shepherd. But when he received it as an impartation, he was released. There was a complete relaxing, a release. Ah, yes, all is well. And out of that came this entire class. And that's what he's trying to show us. Now, in the experience of our students, there still remains the need to go within and sometimes be very patient for minutes or even hours until that depth is reached which brings to light the needed presence and power, realization, or release into God. And that's where we're at. We're practicing our 12 periods a day. We're meeting here once a week on Wednesday for meditation together. Hopefully one day soon we'll meet together out here in the world at some location. Now, he moves on and he says, out of 100 students whom you could teach for a period of 3 to 5 years, it would be very fortunate if you could turn out 2 or 3 practitioners and 1 teacher. And so you see the impossibility of ever having college or university. Now, there are, probably 50 of us now listening to these Kailua talks and reading these chapters. So if you understand what he's saying, he's saying that all 50 of us could listen to these talks, read these chapters for a period of 5 years, and it would be very fortunate if you could turn out 1 practitioner. That tells you it really is few who enter, doesn't it? And yet it all comes down to, well, he'll tell you later in this chapter. It comes down to your determination to make that contact. Healing and teaching, he says, come only through spiritual consciousness. And we know what that developed spiritual consciousness is now. Now, we are here for one purpose. Having had years and years of study and preparation and some measure of demonstration, we are seeking that experience. With the background that we have had in study and meditation and practice, our attention now is not on learning more truth, but abiding more in the spirit than in the letter. Now, this tells us clearly that this Kailua study series was not a beginner's class, because the beginner is learning the letter of truth. This class is designed to take you out of the letter and into the actual experience of the spirit. And because he said we have had years of study and meditation and practice, those that attended this class were advancing students. Now, I've had 3 people tell me, Oh, I've studied the Kahlua series before, or I listened to some of those tapes. That's just for beginners. And they are sadly mistaken. It went right over their head, didn't it? All right. After you have been through much of this knowing, simple truth, deep truth, spiritual truth, all forms and expressions of truth, you come right back to your childhood and simply say, the Lord is my shepherd. I have nothing more to think about. Which is exactly the same as, no answer to this. Thy grace is my sufficiency. Or exactly the same as, I don't have to work on that. Father, thy will be done. And all the weight drops off your shoulders. You see, you're released. So it gets to the point where you don't have to know a lot of things with your mind. It gets to the point where you learn how to do it. It's just like driving a car. I'm sure all of you have had the experience of suddenly coming to your senses and realizing, wow, I'm almost home. I don't even remember making that trip. And yet here I am. I'm the one driving the car. I just drove 10 miles and wasn't even there. But somehow the car was driven. And it's the same in this. You reach a place where you don't have to work that hard. You don't have a lot of conscious thinking involved. It's just simply, the Lord is my shepherd, and a weight falls off. Like he experienced. You really do get to the place where you can make that contact with just a smile. And then it is said you heal with just a smile. But now we know what that is. So, the realization has taken place when you experience that release. The words aren't important. I don't care if you sit down to meditate. Sometimes I've sat down to meditate before, and I've got in my mind an idea that I'm going to close my eyes and think, Thy grace is my sufficiency, for instance. And I sit down, I relax, I put my feet down, and I fold my hands in my lap, and I get ready to close my eyes, and before they're half closed, there's a flooding of the presence. Why, I didn't even get to say my scripture. It's not dependent on you. It starts to have a life of its own. Well, it always had a life of its own, but I mean it starts to function you. So, you know it because A, you have an inner awareness. B, there's a release. You're set free. You feel it. And C, there are signs following. Now, at this stage, the very moment you have had an experience, you will find it's literally true that the very simplest expressions of truth are the deepest, such as Thy grace is my sufficiency. Because there's only one thing which we really need to know, only one thing, that God is. Now, we don't know what God is or how God operates, but there is one thing that counts. Knowing that God is, or having the inner realization. Do we know, he asked, I and the Father are one? I have never met anyone that knows that, never. There always seems to be a separate entity or identity called Joel. And as I look out there, I see separate entities called Bill or Mary. And in the face of that, I say, I and the Father are one. And then I know, of course, that it may be true, but I can't say that I know that I and the Father are one. And yet, when I am in the depths of the God experience, then I do know it. I know it, because then I know who I am, where I am, and what I am appearing as. You catch glimpses of it. And that's what we're doing in these meditations. Catching a glimpse is having it come into your awareness. And when you catch a glimpse of it, you're released. And incidentally, if you're doing specific healing work, you're released from the hypnotism that has you thinking about this condition. or the hypnotism that someone else is wrapped up in thinking about their problem. You're released. And if you're not meeting a specific problem, if you're just sitting in meditation to release the Christ, you are released from your human, well, from the thoughts and things of this world, from a human sense of being, and the Christ flows. But there will always be that release. Now, in our meditations, more particularly in your meditations at home, from now on, give more concern to experiencing God than to thoughts about God. In fact, if necessary, he says, say to yourself, nothing that I could think about God is true. My thoughts aren't truth. God is truth. Words aren't truth. My thoughts aren't truth. God is truth. So therefore, let me stop thinking and declaring and experience truth. You see, truth is an experience. Truth isn't an objectified thing that you can be over here and know, because then that would be two. In our meditations, there should be longer periods of realizing that this truth that I'm thinking, this truth that I'm knowing, this truth that I'm reading, isn't really the truth. It's only truth when I experience it within. And so then be patient. Even though you meditate a few minutes and stop, go back and meditate again a few minutes and stop. Go back and meditate again a few minutes and stop. Until you do reach that point of contact, of experience, because that is what we're really waiting for. The actual demonstration of God will bring harmony and grace on earth. So every time we experience it, we are loosing God on earth. And that God goes before us, goes out into this world to do its mighty works. And now this is important. Listen up. Without someone experiencing it, God is not on earth. Now you can just underline that, paste it up on your wall. It's the truth. Without an individual experiencing God, God is not on earth. So it's not true. And if you hear people or you receive messages online of people saying, God is omnipresent. God is omnipresent. This isn't true, this thing that's happening. God is omnipresent. You know that's a lie. That's the mind imitating truth. Now you know God is not omnipresent. God is only where God is realized. That's why this thing is happening. Because no one was there to realize God. Which, if they were there to realize God, would have set them free from the hypnotism, and the appearance would dissolve. It all comes back to, where is it realized? Where is the contact made? There has to be an individual giving expression to Christ in order for Christ to be available to the world. When you are ill and you turn for help, there has to be Christ manifest as a practitioner or teacher in human form in order for you to benefit. Unless, of course, you are one of the very, very rare souls on the face of the globe who came here with direct contact with the source. And if you're one of those, and I think at least one of us in this group are, then you're very, very fortunate. For the rest of us, it is necessary, when we are seeking help, that we find an individual sufficiently imbued with the Christ to make our healing evident or outpictured. And so it is, there are millions on earth today looking to us and to others like us, but they are not going to find healing unless they find individuals imbued with the Christ, so that the Christ and the individual have become one. Then in that degree does their healing take place. Now, we can bring this over here, back where he said there comes an actual moment of transition. An actual moment, a second, a minute, a time, an actual moment in which you make the transition to living in spirit and spirit living in you. And then it's, I live, yet not I, Christ liveth. So, that's what being imbued with the Christ means. And that's the direction we're walking. So there's the secret of spiritual healing. The degree of realized Christ in the consciousness of one individual can give physical, mental, moral, financial freedom to thousands or tens of thousands. The degree of realized Christ in your consciousness is the degree of harmony that is brought into your body, your business, your home, your community, your friends, your families. Now, we understand the degree of realized consciousness, or Christ in your consciousness, means the degree of realized Christ in your consciousness means your ability to sit and commune with it, make contact with it several times a day, or maybe most of the day. If you had the ability to rest in it like Joel does, and you do have that ability, if you're exercising that ability to rest in it as often as he does, then you have a degree of realized Christ in your consciousness. Let us not believe for a moment, not everyone will be receptive and responsive to it in our families. Let us not believe for a moment that everyone who touches our life is going to be receptive and responsive to this Christ that we're contacting. But that isn't our function to care about that. Our function is not to be concerned with who it is that receives the benefit of this Christ. Our concern is that we experience daily the Christ, loose it upon the earth, and then let it do its work. Someone of whom you may never hear in your whole life will be receiving the benefit of that Christ, but it is never given anyone to know that. Peace on earth will be brought about by virtue of those few individuals who are willing to be servants of the Most High, and servants is a very good word, too. Those who are willing to sacrifice, give up time, effort, energy toward the actual experience of this Christ so that you can say, I felt it. That's all. That's all. I felt the click. I felt the presence. That's all you need. Because at that moment, you have loosed the Christ on earth. And so I'm stressing, this is for all our students, wherever they may be. This is for you hearing this word, that we understand ourselves to be a spiritual underground, that we understand our function on earth every day is to realize the presence, power, activity of the Christ, realize the very feeling of the presence, and then let it go and be about its Father's business, wherever that may be, in whatever way. And so we've been giving our marching instructions. You can be assured of this, that Christ will overturn and overturn and overturn until he comes whose right it is. You know, we will see forms of error that we will really believe to be error when in fact it is the Christ overturning. And I think we saw that, right after Joel made the transition, I know I saw it in the race riots, in the riots in Watts, in the riots in Harlem, where they were crying out that this has to change. And it did change, didn't it? And maybe a little later in the hippies who came along and said, down with the establishment, this is not right. You shouldn't just march off into a war without asking why. We need to question these things. The government's not always right. And so we saw that change too, didn't we? And so sometimes it looks like a bad thing, he says. It looks like error, when it is in fact the Christ overturning. So it is our function to function as a spiritual underground. Now, the only life we have to live from now on is a spiritual existence, which would certainly not be for our own good only, but for whatever good could come through the realization of Christ on earth. He wants this circle of Christ, doesn't he? If you want something for yourself, you are not listening to the message of the infinite way. All right, now here's some more instructions. And again, it's proof that this is an advanced class. The message of the infinite way is for us, you and I, for we, to bring to those who still want something of the earthly nature, to bring it to them. Better health, better supply, better employment, better marriage, whatever we can bring. But not because we care one iota whether or not they have it, but because it is an evidence of what the activity of the Christ can do in human experience. And so it may lead them to the point of experiencing all human good and then saying, well, I don't want any more of that. And then they join the ranks of those of us who say, what difference does it make? What difference? I want to devote my inner life to the realization of this Christ, and that's where we're standing. Now, this does not in any wise change our outer lives. Our outer lives are still lived as family men or family women. Our outer life does not change. In fact, it becomes intensified. But while we continue to live the normal life on the outer plane, we have the separate inner life which no man knoweth. All right, now this is not an absolute, because for a long while we live our normal lives. Nobody knows what we're doing within. And yet, as he has said repeatedly, eventually one person is led to us, and then two, and then five, 10, 25, 100, 1,000, whatever. So in that sense, you are then lifted out of your normal family life and into a life of mission, or into a mission, which the Christ, you are making contact with the Christ will perform through you and as you. But for a long while, nobody knows. We're still husbands, wives, fathers, dads, grandpas, grandkids, students, employees, whatever. But within, we're making this contact. So this is our particular form of alms, the spiritual awareness, and we are not going to do it so that the world thinks we are praying. We do it sacredly. We do it secretly. We do it within our own being while outwardly living as close to our normal lives as we can. Now, I live in a community here in the mountains of North Carolina. And it's a pretty rural area. There are a lot of farms. They used to grow a lot of tobacco. But now the United States has decided tobacco is a bad thing. So it's put a lot of them out of business. So there's not a lot of tobacco growing. Although there's still some. I still drive by some tobacco fields. However, the people here wear, most of the times they wear caps, you know, like a baseball cap, only it won't be baseball probably. It'll be something like a John Deere riding mower or something, or John Deere tractor rather. They wear jeans, they wear shirts, and they have a very different language. When I first moved here, I couldn't understand it. I came from Southern California, where we might say something like, you guys take care now. Or no, we probably wouldn't even say that. What would we say? We'd say, see you later. Take care. Up here, they say things like, you can stay in touch now. You know, down in Florida, they said, you all. Up here, it's yuns. 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 Yuns, give us a call. Now, I am placed in the middle of this, and by the way, it's the Baptist Belt. Please don't misunderstand me. I am not prejudiced against mountain people. I love them. I think that they are some of the most honorable, honest people I have ever met. And hardworking, like you can't believe. But I'm not a Baptist. And so this is the Baptist Belt. And there's a Baptist church almost, I'd say there's one almost every half a mile or every mile. They're everywhere. And up here, I have a cap. I wear jeans. I wear a shirt. I haven't yet learned how to say yuns, but I do say, well, see y'all later, or something like that. You know, I'm sure you hear it in my voice more than I do, because I've been here so long. But the point I'm making is nobody knows what I'm doing inside. There has been different functions and reasons to attend church up here, and when I have gone, I have stood up and sung the songs and sat down and listened to the sermons, and nobody can tell I'm any different. They have no idea what I'm doing inside, which is making that contact. Even in the middle of the church, I have made that contact. So the point is that for a long time, we are an underground. Nobody knows what we're doing, and that's as it should be. All right, so I've got my disguise up here. I've got my jeans, which I happen to like. I'm comfortable in them. I've got my cap, and I've got my Ford Explorer, with four-wheel drive, and I drive up and down these mountains, and nobody ever knows that I'm recognizing and realizing the Christ as I'm driving along. So, yes, we don't leave these things, our family life and so on, but when we reach that point of transition and the Christ takes over, it may very well lift us out of that and into a mission. All right, so back to this. This morning he says, I was just struck. It was like a bolt of lightning with this idea of not mistaking human good for spirituality and not depending on external activities for the inner grace that produces harmony in our experience. And before we get into this, put on your honesty cap. This is going to require, again, self-honesty. The only one that would lie to you is your own mind, because it's not your mind. It's the world mind. And it will lie to you and try to imitate Christ and try to imitate spiritual experience and try to imitate truth. And if you buy it, you make no progress this whole lifetime. Except maybe at the very end, when you're passing out of this experience, you may realize, oh, crap, look what I did. I bought it. And then maybe you'll never have to go through that again, because you will see, I'm sure it'll be in, they'll be impressed in your soul. Oops. I settled for the imitation. Now that I'm not in a body and I experience my infinite self, oh, I blew it. I missed it. But I'm telling you now, if you recognize this, if you apply honesty, don't allow it to trick you, settle for nothing less than the actual real experience, then you won't be disappointed and have to do this again. All right, so putting your honesty cap on, we read where he says all this bit about eating meat. He says, the point that I would like you to see is that giving up of meat or furs or leather is not going to help the development of our inner spiritual grace. But the development of inner spiritual grace might bring about giving up of these on the outer plane. Now, he says here, the reason that this strikes me so forcibly this morning is this. At every stage of our unfoldment, we are apt to reach the conclusion or receive the temptation to believe that something we do or think in the human realm is going to help us in the development of our spiritual awareness. Whereas this isn't so. And I wrote up here, being an altruistic vegetarian doesn't help at all. It doesn't help at all to develop your spiritual discernment to say, I am not going to eat animals anymore because of those poor little animals. I shouldn't be doing that. That won't help your spiritual development. I'm sorry, and if you've come to that conclusion, I'm sorry for the rude awakening, but it won't help your spiritual development. However, if in your spiritual awareness, meat and the eating of meat just falls away. That's quite different. That's quite different. You see, the change must be from the inside out. Now, I don't eat pork very rarely because, well, I didn't make the decision not to eat it. It's not because I'm Jewish, because I'm not. And I told you the story before. I ate it and ate it and ate it, and one day I came into the kitchen and my wife was making sausage biscuits and gravy, of which she is world-renowned almost for her recipe. And I came into the kitchen and I smelled it, and that was it. Something within, because of those meditations that week, just said, no more. I didn't decide it. I couldn't stick it in my mouth. It wasn't a choice. I didn't do it for any altruistic reasons. It's not because I love the poor little piggies. I don't even care. Really. I know. Maybe that sounds heartless, but I'm interested in the invisible realm. And how it appears out here is up to it. And so I don't care. Pigs or no pigs, what matter? But I can't eat one anymore. So I suppose if two of them move onto my property, I'm going to have to build a pen and put corn out there and feed them, because I'm not going to eat them. And it wasn't by choice. It just fell away. And other things have fallen away, and I know they have for you too. Maybe you used to have a proclivity for cursing or yelling out cuss words at a ball game or something, and maybe that fell away. Maybe it was drinking beer that fell away. I don't drink anymore either. I haven't since 1972, when that fell away. I don't smoke anymore, not at least for the last 6 years, since that fell away. So it's from the inside out. You can't take spirituality and paste it onto your humanhood. And if you think you can by changing your language and talking in a spiritual voice and saying, it's an illusion, I'm one with God, everything's beautiful, you're lying. And the proof will be in the demonstration. There won't be any signs following. And you're still sick, you're still suffering, you're still doing this or that. Oh, okay. So just, you know, don't con me. You can con yourself, but don't con me. So the point here is that at every stage of our unfoldment, we are going to be receiving the temptation, which is world mind, to believe that something we do or think is going to help us. It has nothing to do with what you do or think. Eat meat or don't meat, who cares? It has nothing to do with that. Read truth or don't read it, who cares? It has nothing to do with that. Listen to talks, tapes, or don't listen to talks, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with your making this contact over and over to the point of transition where the spirit takes over. And then these things fall away. That's why Joel said in some of his books, don't wait until you're good to come to God. Come with your sins, and your sins will be changed. So the point then is not to accept the belief that there is some virtue in an outer thing, in an act of omission or commission, that some sacrifice will enhance us spiritually. Yes, I'm going to tithe 10% every month, period. That won't help. You can't bribe God. But you can make the contact, even if you don't tithe. And then that spirit may say, give over here, give there, do this, do that. And then you'll find your tithing, not because you decided, it just happened. Now, don't believe that the indulgence of some form of outer human living will enhance us spiritually. Spirituality is developed within our own being through the very work which we have been engaged in for these years. Reading spiritual wisdom, hearing spiritual wisdom, associating with those on the path, that's an important point, and making this contact within. So, Don't fool yourself and don't allow yourself to fool you. It's not what you do or think. It's making the contact. Because where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. And that's our goal. The attaining of the consciousness of the Spirit of the Lord, or the awareness of it, the attaining of the realization of God's presence, that is accomplished as the meditations are increased in time and in depth. The inner spiritual light increases. The kingdom of God is found by inner realization, not by any outer act of omission or commission, but by an inner realization. So if you're volunteering for some spiritual thing because you think it's going to help you, you might as well give it up. It's not. But if you're volunteering because the love is flowing out of you, well, you can't stop it. That's Christ itself. Let us agree that there isn't a single thing in all this world that can't be changed, adjusted by a sufficient degree of depth to our meditation. This is very important here. There are degrees, there are stages, there are steps. In the absolute, God is all. But you can't walk around saying God is all, like we read online. God is all. It's lovely. And then they're dying. They're broke. No. There are for us, in relativity, steps and stages of unfoldment. So let us agree that in ordinary meditation, it will gradually dispel most of the discords and inharmonies from our experience, as long as they are not too great a degree of intensity. Let us further agree that a deeper meditation will meet some of the problems that do not yield to the ordinary or lighter forms of meditation. And let us further agree that the most intense form of error, the last enemy that shall be overcome, death itself, will yield to a degree of Christ realization which is deep and powerful. And so you see, there are stages, aren't there? We must start somewhere. This is a wonderful paragraph here. We must start somewhere, making that contact. Then you can see that you, hearing my voice, become master of your own fate. You become master of your own life because it is in the degree, in the depth of God consciousness to which you attain that determines the degree of harmony in your outer experience. Why? Because the inner awareness always manifests or expresses or demonstrates as signs following in your outer and as your outer experience. So it is then, it is you who determine whether or not there will be an hour here and there, or 2 or 3 hours when the phone is cut off, when the front door is locked, when nobody is home to the external world, and when in which you are determined, I will contact this inner presence and power. I will get sufficiently still inside that it can take over and breathe through my lungs, live through my body, live my life's experience, so that I can say with Paul, I live yet not I, Christ liveth my life. In other words, so that you can make the transition from man of earth to that one who has their being in Christ. Now, Christ is the Spirit of God in man, but it is deep within you. The Master said, the way is straight and narrow, few there be that enter, because these hundreds of generations of human experience have so far separated us from this inner contact that we cannot go back now easily and make the contact. And so it takes patience on our part, endurance on our part, determination, that we will stand by faithfully in our meditation until Christ, the activity of God in our consciousness, is touched. Now, if the realization of God becomes an important way of life to us, then of course what the world calls sacrifice of time or effort isn't a sacrifice at all, but a pleasure. Now, the gift that we are seeking is the actual experience of Christ, the actual living in God. We will live and move and have our being in God. Isn't that wonderful? And it's true, too. The years necessary to the study, the practice, the meditation are not years of sacrifice now, but years of devotion to that which is our goal in life. And this is something you need to ask yourself. Well, let me read it first. This would not apply to the student who has turned to truth merely for the solution of human problems. No, it wouldn't apply to the people that aren't in this class. That is why we do not speak this language to the student at that point, when they are merely seeking a solution to their human problems, but we speak rather on their level of consciousness. The Master healed the sick, preached the gospel, gave them the Sermon on the Mount, but to the disciples he went further. And so which are you, class members? Which are you? Are you the one seeking a solution to your human problems? Then do that, and then turn away from this study for a while. Just seek it. You might get a practitioner's help, or two or three practitioners, until your problem's met. Then maybe you want to return to this. I don't know. Or are you the one through which the Christ goes further? Because he showed them the healing principle. He took them to the Mount of Transfiguration to show them the hidden mysteries of the spiritual universe. And he expected of them that they had left those nets, left their nets, that they had left their human desires for human fulfillment. They had left the goal of just making money and left the goal of having fame, and that their whole heart and soul and mind were centered in the hidden mysteries. And so, are you ready? Are you ready? Have you come to make the transition? If you have, you're in the right class. Now, in the old days, if you were an aspirant or a beginner, that's someone seeking help from a practitioner or a teacher for a solution to their human problems, then you bowed before the higher student who was perhaps in the second degree. The second degree is us, those of us living this who have not yet made the transition. If you were in the second degree, you submitted yourself to those who were in the third degree, and those in the third degree have made the transition. Spirit is beginning to live them almost full time. All the way up to the Master itself, and the Master ruled supreme because everyone recognized that the Master had attained a degree of Christhood not yet attained by anyone else. And so their allegiance, their loyalty, their obedience was based not on a rule, not on a regulation, but on a recognized state of consciousness. And I have to ask you, and I have to ask myself, do we practice this today? Do we show respect? Do we show, not bow down before, but do we acknowledge and show respect to someone that has attained a degree beyond us? Or do we talk to them as if they're our equal? I don't know. We have to look at this, don't we? If I was sitting down with Joel, would I talk to him as if he was my equal? Would I say, "Hey man, why don't you just spit it out? I'm not understanding what you're saying, dude." Or would I show him respect and acknowledge that he's attained a degree beyond me and say, "Joel, could I please have a minute of your time? I'm not quite understanding this, and I really want to get it." Would I show him some respect? Don't we need to do that to the people that are ahead of us? I think we do. So it will be with everyone who attains the realization of this Christ of their own being, who touches it or is touched by it. Instantly, they will be freed of dependence on person, on thing, circumstance, and condition. And all of life will now be a cooperation, and yet also an acknowledgement to those who are a step beyond where we may be at any given moment. All right. There is no limit to the depth of Christhood, and therefore there is no limit to your attainment. Any limitation would, of course, be your own limitation. But that which you place on yourself. But even if you advance in this work, if you permit yourself to be taken away from your meditation and contemplation by the busyness of your practice or student body or organizational activities, then you will cheat yourself. regardless of the amount of the outer activity, you must limit that by consciously removing yourself from that activity for long enough periods to abide in your spiritual stillness. Sure, it all revolves around making that contact, doesn't it? So no one must ever allow their outer activity to grow to such an extent that it deprives them of their hours, days, weeks, and months of inner unfoldment. It is a very simple thing, after one has touched the center, to find their outer activity so great that the matter of gaining a fortune or fame is almost as simple as a twist of the wrist. But it is an indulgence in material prosperity, and it would soon take from us the spiritual gift, which is worth far more than that which we would give up by not permitting the outer world, not even the outer spiritual world, to deprive us. Now, I have to tell you the truth here, because I know what he's talking about, and so it's necessary for me to tell you. I can right now get on a plane, fly out to California, put some classes on for a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, have some individual sessions Sunday or Monday, leave, fly over to Colorado, put on a couple more classes, have some individual sessions, and fly home with probably $3,000 in my pocket. Of course, I'll have to deduct my plane fare and hotel and food and everything, but I'll have, a little bit left. I can do that. I can bring a set of books with me and sell those too. I can bring some CDs and sell those. With just a little flick of my wrist, I could start traveling around this country and build up a pretty good nest egg, let's say. I could build up my bank account, which right now has approximately $65 in it. And so that would look pretty good, wouldn't it? What's wrong with that? Well, everything. It's wrong because it would be me doing it. And I refuse to do it. Now, I'm working with the principles very hard of impersonalization and nothingization and resting until that inner release. And I'm seeing some results. And I want to see more results. I want to be proficient at it to the point where someone can call up and I can sit down, make that contact, and experience that release, and then Christ will appear as harmony. Now, I have had people call me that have said, please, you don't need to go repeat this. This is just for purpose of showing. So let's put it this way. I've had people call up with some severe problems, and I've gone into meditation, made that contact, and they call back the next day or two and said, terrific, it's gone. And then they sent me a little donation or gratitude, gift of gratitude. However, I have also had someone call up and say, I'm not showing any help yet, and the thing drags on and on and on. I don't like that. I don't feel like I have the capacity to go out and say, listen, people, let me give you these truth classes, and this thing really works. I don't feel like I can do that honestly, and honesty is important to me, which you know by now from listening to me. I can't do that honestly if I myself haven't proved the principle to my own satisfaction. So I'm not going out and giving classes until I've proved this principle to my satisfaction, to where something within says, okay, you've seen it work enough, now go. And that voice hasn't said it. And even though I know I can just twist my wrist and do this, I'm not doing it. I'm sitting at home with my $65 in my account, and if necessary, I'll go out and get a job, and if necessary, I'll go out and get two jobs. But I'm not going to do this until that inner voice says, now. And so he's telling the truth. It's a very simple thing, once you've touched the center, to be able to say, oh, yeah, I can do this. But if you do that, you give up that which is worth far more than anything the world has to give. And I'm unwilling to do that. So the master insisted on his 40 days in the mountains. The master insisted on disappearing from the multitudes, and so must we. We must insist on withdrawing from our families, from our friends, from our human obligations, from those periods necessary, for those periods necessary to our inner development and unfoldment. And we must discipline ourselves, because the outer world accepts us at our value, our own evaluation, and permits us to have time alone eventually. But then comes the temptation when we have our time alone and we don't use it in the way that we should. And so you will see one of the most difficult periods to go through is a time such as we have had this morning with nothing active in the outer world. Yeah, the mind always wants to be busy with something. Okay, this paragraph where it says the master insisted on his 40 days is telling us that you've got to be willing to give up your family, your friends, your human obligations in order to have those 12 times a day. Now, you don't walk away from your families and say, I'm sorry, I'm going to seek God and go live in a cave. That would be inappropriate and wrong, and you would be hurting people. But while you're with your family, you take less time. You don't sit down and watch television from the time you walk in to the time you go to bed. You understand? You don't set up a lot of social dilly-dally meetings and parties and get-togethers with your friends. You've got to have the time. If you don't make the contact, you won't reach that transition. And so, this is one of the temptations, he says in the next paragraph, is that the mind doesn't like to be still. And yet, it thinks, well, what are you doing? You're having all these quiet periods and nothing's showing up. But that's not true. Well, certainly nothing is to show for it at this moment, he says, but the fruitage of a morning like this morning will continue to appear for years to come, influencing not only our own lives, but the lives of all who touch us. And so it is that an hour or 2 hours of silent meditation, of contemplation, communion with God, with no seeming object, no purpose, no desire for attainment of any kind, not even a healing, that is the depth of the vision that opens up the inner experience to us, and in ever deepening quality. So let's try it again. And he takes the class into a meditation. And again, over and over, he points out that this working towards making that contact to the point of transition is for the advancing student. And don't let anybody tell you these Kalua study series talks, oh, those are for beginners. That's foundational work, isn't it? Yeah, right. Yeah, if you consider making the transition into Christhood foundation. Okay. I think that's pretty plain. In the last chapter, he told us that it was spiritual development, individual spiritual development, which is the only thing that will bring Christ or God on earth. And it has to be yours. In this one, he's saying, how much are you willing to give to it? Are you willing to give it your all? Are you willing to go for broke? Are you ready to learn the deep mysteries? Or are you still seeking for some human solution? Can you leave that alone long enough to seek the deeper mysteries? Because it may just be that in making that contact and experiencing the deeper mystery, that the human problem will fall away. It may really be that if you seek this inner contact, all else will be included or added unto you. It may just be that if you come with your sins, you shall be made white as snow. But the point of that second part of that chapter is that you cannot believe the temptation when it comes to you that something you do or think makes a difference, because it doesn't. What makes the difference is abandoning all that and clinging to the inner knowing If I make this contact, if I rest, if I am still enough, I will experience Christ. And if I come again and again to the well of my consciousness, that Christ will take over. Are we all in agreement? Okay. I love you all so very much. We have 4 chapters left and 1 summary, and that will complete these Kaivalya study talks. That will be 50 talks. Until we meet again later this evening in meditation, or until we meet again next week, may the Spirit of the Living God embrace you, flow through you, flow into your being, dissolve your mental anguish, and reveal my peace. First, as an inner release into that beautiful peace of the Father, of the Christ. Second, in the harmony appearing as what appears to be an outer experience. And may you come to see that your consciousness, filled with peace, is that in which you live and move and have your being. Amen.